阅读、科技、旅行，
生活可以很大，对话设计、学习，思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客《狗熊有话说》，一听就停不下来的哦。
Hello， 你好，欢迎收听独立知识型脱口秀《狗熊有话说》（Bear Talk）， 我是大狗熊。今天这期节目呢，是一期英文的访谈节目，那么主题呢，依然是和设计有关。大家知道，在前个月的时候呢，我开设了一个新档的纯英文主题的播客，叫做 Bear Academy。 那么这个播客呢，是关于 design, technology and productivity， 是关于设计个人效率成长和这个科技的主题。那么面向的听众呢，主要是国外的英文母语的用户。那么第一期访谈呢，是针对一个叫做Zero 的设计公司的一位设计主管进行的访谈。那么反响呢还挺不错。第二期节目，也就是今天这期节目呢，我请到了Lean UX 精益 UX 用户体验这本书的作者 Jeff Gottlieb， 谈一谈他对于设计师设计生涯设计师的成长这个主题的一些看法。那么这期访谈节目其实是这样的，我说一说这个背景啊。作为一个设计师，有那么一些书呢是必须要去读的，比如说如果你是一个 UX 用户体验设计师的话，那么至少有那么几本书是你不读的话你不能说自己是设计师的，比如说 Don Norman 的这个设计心理学The Design of Everyday Things， 还有像我今天要推荐的这本就 Lean UX 精益用户体验设计。那么这些书呢都是你进入这个行业必读的书。那么 Lean UX 这本书其实解决了很大一个方面的问题，就是作为一个设计师，要做产品设计，要做这个具体数字产品的用户体验设计的话，怎么来和一个团队合作，特别是这个技术团队怎么和这个开发者合作。那么特别在面向这个目前的大部分的科技公司都是使用敏捷式的这个开发环境的话，就是 Agile 这个开发环境的话，你怎么去和他们去和其他的工程师合作呢？那么 Lean UX 这本书呢，讲了一个非常非常精彩的这个工作方法。那么如果你要和科技公司里的这个开发者打交道的话，那么这本书是必读的。这本书也是我在入行 UX 用户体验的时候读的，那么开头的第一二本书吧，对我的启发非常的大，那么也帮助我找到了相应的这个工作。所以当时我对这个 Jeff Gottlieb 就是作者呢也非常崇拜啊，找了很多他的视频啊，他的这个他的这个采访呀去看。那么后面他写了第二本书，其实他写了很多本书啊，就是后面他写了另外我觉得非常重要的第二本书，叫 Forever Employable， 那么是在今年六月份推出的那么一直在这个亚马逊呢都卖得很好。那么当时我第一时间读完这本书呢，就发起了一个访谈和他呢聊了一下如何我们能做到在现在这个充满不确定性环境的这个当下呢，能够保证自己一直能够找到工作，一直能够处于一个在不确定性之中把握确定的这种人啊。那么那期节目呢，也推荐大家去收听 Bear Talk 狗熊有话说的相应节目。所以今天这期实际上是当我回到这个设计主题的这个播客的访谈的这个选择的时候，我想和 Lean UX 的作者也就是 Jeff 好好的聊一聊关于设计方面他的一些心得和体验。那么一开始呢，我计划呢是聊一些关于初级的这个设计师 在入行之前需要做的一些准备，还有可能会面临的一些挑战和问题。但后面我觉得大部分这些问题呢，其实都可以在 Lean UX 这本书面找得到。也就是说，如果你是想入行用户体验设计，那么很多在这本书里的答案已经能够回答你这个问题了。但作为 Jeff 呢，他是一个在这个行业工作了20年的专家，写了那么多书，也发表了那么多资深的观点。我更想问他的是，当你已经入行了，成为一个设计师了，如何能够提升自己，从一个初级设计师变成一个 senior 的，变成一个资深的这个用户体验设计师？而且在这个过程中，有哪些可能会有的坑你需要去绕过去的？有哪些你能够提升的这个方向策略你能够去把握的？那么他在这方面一定是有最多的这个经验可以分享，然后能够提供很多非常有见解的一些技巧和策略，能够帮助我们达成，就是当你来到这个行业了，当你已经踏入一只脚，已经在做设计了，怎么能够变成一个更资深的专家呢？所以今天这期节目是我采访他的时候呢，临时把之前的这个计划打乱，然后呢，针对我的一些感受和体验呢，和他进行了一个讨论。那么如果你已经是一个设计师了，你想要提升自己，这期节目是你必须去收听的一期节目。 OK， 那么接下来就让我们切换到这期节目的原声英文版的 Now you are a designer, but now what?
Hello and welcome to Bear Academy Podcast. Here, we talk things about design, productivity, and technology. I'm your host, Bear, a UX designer who lives in Auckland, New Zealand.
And I think one of the best things that you can do is diversify your experience in the first 10 years of your career. And so one of the things that I would say to avoid is keeping your first 5 to 10 years of work homogenous, and instead really work towards diversifying the first decade of your career. And then, you know, once you've got 7, 8, 9, 10 years of experience,you can really, factually say, well, I really dislike financial services work, but what I really do like is I like doing commerce work. I really enjoy the commerce or I like doing nonprofit work. So I'm going to go work in the public sector. And then you can really kind of refine kind of the next part of your career as well.
Many people asked me to recommend books for learning UX, and there's a must-read book on my top 5 list, Lean UX by Jeff Goldfield. Who's Jeff? According to Google Books, Jeff Goldfield is the co-author of Lean UX and Sense and Respond, as well as a speaker and organizational designer.He was most recently nominated for a Thinker 50 Award for Innovation. Over his 20 years in technology, Jeff has worked to bring a customer-centric, evidence-based approach to product strategy, design, and leadership at a wide range of companies like Neo Innovation, The Ladders, Web Trends, and AOL.He regularly keynotes conferences, teaches workshops, and works directly with client leadership teams across North America, Europe, and Asia. This is who Jeff is. I had the honor of talking with Jeff twice. The first time was to introduce his new book, Forever Employable, and then I scheduled another interview with him recently.To talk about design. At first, I would like to hear his suggestions for junior designers and career transitioners, but then I found Most of the suggestions for junior designers from him could be found in his two books, LeanUX and Forever Employable. I don't need to waste too much time on talking about this. If you're really interested in getting your first job in design industry, the best approach would be reading these two books. But as a senior designer, I mean a design leader in his industry, in his experience, he definitely has heaps of experience to provide guidance for intermediate and senior designers. So let me describe the user case like this. Probably that will be easier to understand. As a guy who would like to start my designer career, I got a designer job and work as a designer every day. That's great. I got myself in the party. But now what? How could I become a senior designer? What are the pitfalls that I need to avoid? What is the roadmap for my career? And back to the basic, how to define a senior designer? I asked Jeff these questions and got heaps of insightful answers. So, for this episode of Bear Academy Podcast, I brought to you Jeff Goldthief, the author of LeanUX, Forever Employable, a speaker and organizational designer. Let's jump into it.
What I used to do in the previous podcast is that I would send an agenda with the questions and something I would like to ask. Yeah, I did that for this chat, and provide some and prepared some questions related to how a designer, especially for a junior designer, when they got involved as the UX designer, what will be the challenges for them and how can they cope with it. So this is at first was my first version of the questions. But then I think I think again, because during what I work at this stage, the current challenge I got is not exactly for junior designers. It's more like for the intermediate to senior designer. I think at this stage, like if you're a junior designer, it will be more related to the techniques and principles, and probably the best way for the junior designer is just read your book, like LeanUX, and start to adapt some techniques in their job. But as a senior designer, it might be more complex because there could be the challenges is not just about the project, maybe about stakeholders, about business. So it will be more complex. And I think your experience, because you have a great experience in this field, might help for those people. So I decided to pivot the thing from intermediate from junior to intermediate senior designer, and like it's a informal chat, but basically it's just about some challenges, especially I have during this stage, and also some questions I found from other designers already worked in the industry for a few years, and some common challenges, common questions. So I think just had have a informal chat with you about your insights and opinions. So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That works for me.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Because I would like to start with this one, because it's probably a general one. As a designer, especially as a UX designer, from your experience, like working for different companies, different clients, and start your own business for such a long time, you might see, you already see many different mistakes from other designers, or might be from yourself. So what are the common mistakes that UX designers make when they work with a team? It probably work with an agile team or in a general work with other people. So what are the most common mistakes you've ever seen from other designers?
Yeah, it's a big question, because really it depends a lot on your career goals. I think looking back, especially when I was managing designers, I think some of the biggest mistakes I've seen designers do. So there was a trend for a while, and to be fair, I haven't hired designers in a long time or managed a group of designers in a long time, but there was this trend to say, well, basically I've worked professionally for 2 years, so I'm a senior designer now. And there was this kind of rush to grab a job title where the experience didn't warrant it. There was a push for seniority where the experience didn't match the level that was being requested. And so I've seen that, I saw that a lot for a long time. Somebody would say, well, look, I'm 3 years in, or 5 years, even 5 years in, I'm a senior designer. And you're not. I mean, you're 5 years into your career, right? And so that gives you experience, but to consider yourself one of, so I think there's no need to rush, I think, for that. There are plenty of design jobs. There are plenty of entry-level jobs. There are plenty of senior jobs. There are plenty of leadership jobs. And I think one of the best things that you can do is diversify your experience in the first 10 years of your career. So one of the other mistakes I've seen is somebody will get into an organization or a type of organization and then stay in that organization for a decade, right? Or in that, like, so you'll work in a bank and you'll stay in that bank for 10 years, or you'll work in financial services for 10 years. And while that specialization does help in some situations, it limits your exposure to other ideas, to other ways of working, to other industries. And so one of the things that I would say to avoid is keeping your first 5 to 10 years of work homogenous, and instead really work towards diversifying the first decade of your career, really trying to get a little bit of agency experience, a little bit of in-house experience, some retail, some financial services, some healthcare, some commerce, government work, whatever it is, right? But really try to get a bit of a broader sense. And look, agencies are good for this, right? So agencies are a great way to get a variety of insight. But, and then, you know, once you've got 7, 8, 9, 10 years of experience, you can really, you know, factually say, well, I really dislike financial services work, but what I really do like is I like doing commerce work. I really enjoy the commerce, or I like doing nonprofit work. So I'm going to go work in the public sector. And then you can really kind of refine kind of the next part of your career as well. And so those are at least two things that come to mind right away, is this assumption that, hey, I've been working for 3 years, so I'm a senior designer, and saying, well, I only want to work for startups, or I only want to work for agencies. I think that's risky to your career long term.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. That's awesome. So can I use my word to re-describe it? Like the first one is, as a senior designers, some of them are not junior enough, so that they have they probably need more fundamental practice, like to improve their fundamental skills as in a junior level. Or is this something that you like to describe it like this?
No, I think people jump to the conclusion that they are now a senior designer with too little experience. At least that was my experience when I was hiring designers. you know, you'd see someone with 3 to 5 years of experience on their CV, and they're asking for a senior designer role, right? I'm not going to hire somebody after 3 years of experience for a senior designer role. You're not a senior designer.
Yes.
At that point. You know, as a senior designer, you should be able to mentor other designers. You should have enough experience to avoid some of the common pitfalls. And after 3 years of work, you just don't have that.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And 100% agree. Because that's quite common. Because sometimes the title doesn't represent what you're capable of. And especially, if people just have a few years, like 3 to 5 years experience, and especially if they just focus on one field, like in one industry, get really deep in that level. But if they jump to another field and doesn't have enough understanding or enough knowledge to make the right judgment or decision, so it could be quite rush. And yeah, I totally agree that the second one is something also when you're saying that I can't help thinking, like, for example, if a professional he or she is not a designer yet but would like to transition his or her career into design industry, and probably it's in his or her middle age, like 30, even 40. So is that also the same strategy you would recommend for graduate or just some young designer just enter the industry? It probably good for them to try different things, to try everything and find out which way would be the right direction to go deeper in the second decade of their career. But if for for a 30-year-old designer or 40-year-old designer just start their career, is that something you also recommend to do that?
Look, I think if you're in your 30s and in your 40s, you have experience with specific industries. And so you have a little bit more experience to say, look, I know that I really enjoy working in retail, or I really enjoy working in healthcare, and I've seen so much bad design there that I really want to become a better, a designer in healthcare because I have a better sense of that.
Yeah.
So you might have a better sense about the industry you'd like to work in. So I think in that sense, you can probably make a better decision. But beyond that, I think still trying to get a variety of experience in that domain is smart. So you might go into an organization right away, but if there's an opportunity for you to go work, for example, at an agency that specializes in healthcare clients, that might be a nice way to get a broad set of experiences first and then narrow it down. So I do think you've got more experience. I do think you can refine your direction a bit more explicitly if you're transitioning into UX in your 30s or in your 40s. But ultimately, I think still even a broad variety inside that direction is worthwhile.
Yep, that's awesome. And sorry, I just asked a big question and jumpstart with all the discussion, but yeah. And I think because that could be a question just for start this conversation, but also I think what you mentioned, a senior designer, your definition of a senior designer should be influence other designers and should be able to guide the design process and might be necessary to drive the, even sometimes influence the business decisions. So could you give us an example or how you define a senior designer and what will be the best practice or best way to go for to become a senior designer? Like what will be your suggestion for those people who would like to become a senior designer? Yes, it's probably two questions. What is a senior designer and how to become a senior designer?
I'm going to find a link to share with you. We ran an agency between the years of 2012 and 2015, based in the United States and then ultimately globally. And we developed a fantastic hiring matrix that is sadly still difficult to find now because the website's been down for a while. But I'll find it and I'll share a link with you because we really simplified it. We had product managers, designers, and engineers. And we had basically, it wasn't junior, senior director. It was like designer, senior designer, and then director. And those were the levels that we had in a small agency. So those were the levels. And we articulated it very, very clearly. So I'm going to find this link to share with you so that you can hopefully share it with your listeners there.
Yeah.
But the short of it is that as a senior designer, you need to be able to not only lead clients, so you're leading team or client-facing meetings. You are mentoring other designers. You are contributing well beyond the artifacts of design. You're contributing to design strategy, to product strategy. You're thinking about the business model. And you are avoiding the common pitfalls that less experienced designers would normally fall into. You're justifying all of your work with data or with evidence or with more than, well, I'm a good designer and I like it type of comments, right? That's the kind of stuff that I would expect from a senior designer. But I'll find that link and I'll share it with you. I think it'll be very valuable.
Thanks, Jeff. That will be awesome. Because before that, I saw something like a skill matrix to validate how good a designer is, or like entry level, middle, senior, things like that, and with some different skills like presentation, IA, and interface design, things like that. So it can separate different things. But I think what you mentioned, the measurement for designers should be as simple as possible, and also could be backed by other ways like data, how they can use the data they collected or they found from during the research to influence other stakeholders or business, so things like that. Yeah, that's something just crossed my mind, like a skill matrix that can use. And yeah, that's and I really like what you mentioned, like a senior designer should be able to avoid the common pitfalls, so which like other a junior designer might have. Could you give me some examples, like what are the common pitfalls and your suggestion of how to avoid them?
Yeah, common pitfalls for what?
If I'm a designer, I'm being involved in a project, and during this process, I might need to design the concept and share with the team, and also back up with some support, with some data or other things. So during this whole process, what could be the common pitfalls for designers to make? Actually, I had a few personal experience. Personal example could be one of the common pitfalls. Probably I can share with you first, and then you can give me some other examples that might come to your mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I think the most important thing that you can do is you need to come into any kind of a discussion or a review session for your work with evidence for why you've chosen to make these decisions, or at least justification that goes beyond, I think it looks good, or I think it'll work. I think you need to say, we observed and we've seen through the analytics that people really struggle in step three of the checkout process. And when we talked to them, they said that they really struggled to figure out how to keep adding things to their cart and then check out. So what we did here was we made, what we believe we did was we made the add to cart button really obvious. And, yeah. And in our usability testing, it seems that people really had no issues with this, and it seems to have solved the problem, right? That's at least a compelling argument for why you did that work,
yeah.
Right? Other than I thought it would work, right? And I think that that's the most important part, is if you come in with a well thought out argument that is fact-based, that is evidence-based about why you did the work that you did, well, you stand a better chance of defending your design, which we find ourselves a lot in that position is, how do we defend our work to other folks? Because design is so tangible, everybody can see it, everybody can touch it, everyone has an opinion about it. And so that's really, I think that's really important. I think that there was a quote, I think it was from Jim Barksdale, I think his name was, the CEO of Netscape. He said, what was the quote? It was something like, if you have an idea, bring evidence to back it up. Without any data, it's a battle of opinions, and my opinion always wins. Something like that. It was like, like basically, if you don't bring evidence to the conversation, then my opinion will always win. And I think that's what you need to do. You need to come in and say, look, this is why we chose to do this. Otherwise, you're just making art, and we're not making. We're doing design, and I think that that's really important to recognize and differentiate.
Yeah, that's a great one, and actually I think could be one of the most important thing to be care about for all designers, to always back your design with evidence and with data, with other proof. The case I had quite similar as the pitfall is that I was involved in a project in the middle of the process, and also I gained the resource to do a proper user testing, user interviews, and also came to the recommended solution, backed by the user testing data, and also backed by the quantitative data, and worked the solution with the business stakeholders, and got the agreement, and which make me feel okay. So that's perfect. So I got agreement from business, but then I was pushed back by solution design by the architect, and I made a big mistake that I didn't involve the tech stakeholders in for that design, because different reasons, but just my fault. I know that could be something I can improve for the next time, but I just wonder if have you seen other designers make mistakes like this, and if it's you, what would you do to prevent it? Or if it happened on you, what will you do to fix it?
Yeah, look, it's a common mistake, right? I mean, look, we think we know what we're doing, and we do know what we're doing, and we have a good gut sense that this is the right direction for us to move forward in, for example. And so we get excited about our work. We get optimistic about our work, and we get overconfident. And I think that that is common for designers of any level. And the thing to always push back on is to say, this is what I believe to be true. Here's why I believe to be true. And if you don't have the evidence, then say so. Say, look, based on my experience, I think this is a good solution. And so the next step that I'd like to do is to take this idea and test it in this way, in that way, in this third way. And I'll be back in a few days with some data, and we can talk about how to move forward. And to me, that becomes a far more compelling conversation than trying to manufacture evidence that you don't have, right? Or trying to justify because you don't have it. If you don't have the evidence, say so. Admit it, say, look, I don't have it. I'm gonna go get it. It won't take long. So let's reconvene in 3 days, and then we can make a decision.
Yep, that's great. Actually, Jeff, it's slightly different as for the case I described, is that I got the evidence backed because I got the data from user, but that just the solution I suggested, because there are a few options that the best solution, I think, and also backed by the user's testing data, is the best for from user experience perspective. But after the discussion with tech stakeholders, we compromised to the one with not so good user experience, but is feasible with the time frame of the project, with the available resource of the project, so we make the compromise. I think I can do it better if it's like another time I would be involved in such a project. I will engage the tech stakeholders in the early stage. So yeah, it's slightly different as this. So I already got it, the evidence backed by user testing, by the result, but it's just, we know it, but are we compromised to the second choice? Yeah, that's, I don't know if it's something like also quite common in other business, or yeah, have you have any experience related to this example?
I mean, look, compromise is sadly the nature of you know, any business these days. I mean, you know, it's interesting, right? And you know, in a compromise, nobody wins. And so you've really got to be careful about what you're compromising on and why. And you should be explicit about that. And you should be explicit about the things you will not compromise on. Now, this comes back to the organization. This comes back to culture, because as a designer, It's tough to influence some of that. But for example, you take a look at a company, like, it's a super easy example, so forgive me for reaching for the obvious, but you look at Apple, right? At Apple, they do not compromise on design, right? Yeah. It's just not done, right? And so if there are two solutions, and one is a better design, but more technically difficult, and one is a lesser design but more technically easy, Apple will always do the better design and the more technically difficult one, because they're not willing to compromise about design. And so sadly, we live in a world where most teams and most organizations compromise on everything. And I think that's one of the things that teams lack, organizations lack, is a real strict sense of values and goals. Like, what are we not going to compromise to achieve our goals? And those things end up becoming your brand values as well, right? Yeah. So again, reaching for the obvious example with Apple, you know their brand value. Everyone knows their brand value, right? Because they know that Apple's going to make really great designed products, because they do not compromise on that. And so I think you should watch out for compromise. And I think if it continues to happen inside your organization, I think as a designer, and especially a designer who's been there a little while and has some clout, it's a good opportunity to raise your hand and say, listen, we keep compromising on this, and we keep putting out suboptimal user experiences here. At some point, we've got to draw the line and say, we're not going to compromise on this, and push for it and see what happens, because what happens will reveal the culture of the organization. The organization may say, well, that's great. You know what? We're just going to ship it anyway and get as many features out there as we can. And in that world, right, you're going to always be compromising the design. So maybe you don't want to work there anymore, right? And so again, it's a really good test, especially if you kind of a mid-level or a senior designer to raise your hand and say, listen, this is, you know, we keep compromising this. We've got to take a stand.
Yeah, I got what you mean, Jeff. That's a great, suggestion, because it would be good that we raise the hand and to test, like, what is exactly the value of the company or the goal of the company. So, yeah. What's the bottom line? What's the baseline of the business? And then can make a better decision after that. Like, that's a great suggestion. I think if someone has the same struggle or some same questions, could be tested with stand up and raise the problem. Yeah, and if you compromise at first, that means you will always need to take a step back and another steps back and another, and then it just decrease the value for as a designer. So that's a great example. Thanks, Jeff. I have some other questions, and also speaking of the value, I think one thing could be quite general, but I really want to ask this question: is how we can show the value of your design or the value of the UX? Probably just about design. So as a designer, we know we can provide a solution backed by evidence, and also. Probably from the product people's perspective, the developers, they are the people who can build it. And some other product people might think, I have the same suggestion. I already know the solution because I know better than about the product or about the project than other people. So how we can show the value as a designer, it's probably too general, but I really want to know, hear your opinion, insights on this.
Look, you're solving customer problems and you're solving business problems. Those solutions have value. So if you make customers more successful, that has value. What is that value? Whatever your business model is, the design work that you do impacts that business model one way or the other. And so if you can clearly say, look, when we updated this workflow, the average order value went up by 15% across the board, that's the value of design, right?
Yeah.
If you can clearly say, look, when we reduced the sign-up process by 3 steps, we got 90% more signups than we have in the past, right?
Yeah.
That is an impact to design. That's the measurability of design. And so to do that, you have to have a clear sense of the problem that you're solving, right? If you're just saying, look, hey, we made this great design, and everybody's like, okay, cool. Like, is it good? Is it bad? What is it solving? What's it for? That becomes a difficult conversation to prove, the value of design. But if the team sets out and says, look, our job, we've seen average order values for our e-commerce site decline month over month now for 6 months. So our job is to get average order value to stop declining and even increase by 5%. Now you've got a problem. So you can go solve that problem. And as you build designs and solutions to do that, you're going to come back at some point and say, look, the work that we did seems to have, our average order values aren't falling anymore. In fact, they've been flat now for 2 months, which is great, right? Our next effort is to try to lift them up from, flat to 5% increase. And so that is the impact of design. It's measured in the behavior of the users of the system. And that's why this isn't art. That's why this is design, because if your idea did not move the metrics that you're measuring in the right direction, then your design did not add value. So hopefully you can go learn why that happened, why your design did not add value,
yep.
And then try again. And then based on that, on the second try, the third try, the fourth try, you measure the behavior of your customers. And that's absolutely the key here.
Right. And I think that's also adapted, work for the new feature or the new project, the new product, if it doesn't have the comparison about what before and after.
Yeah.
But it's also is find something like, because even for a brand new project, a brand new product, there will be a problem statement. And also to identify like the market or the scope of the project. So can always find some measurement of the design. Is that what you also suggested?
Yeah, look, you need that baseline, right? So you need something that says, before we did the work, it was X, and now it's X plus 2% or X minus 10% or whatever it is. And, you know, as long as there's an existing system, normally that data exists. Where this becomes a challenge is like you said, with a brand new product that doesn't exist. And so in that situation, you really have to make a decision that says, look, the market opportunity is $80 billion, right? In the first year, we'd like to capture 15 million of those dollars, right? So that's, so we have a target, we have a goal, we have something we believe to be a value, and the only way that we're going to know it's a value is if we change behavior, and we believe that we can capture 15 million. Now you might come back and say, look, we captured 7 million, right? So why didn't we capture the other 8 is a good conversation to have. But that's really the key here is to have a goal. It's a customer-centric, an outcome goal to really make this successful.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks, Jeff. I think it's quite helpful for everyone who's listening about this, but probably someone might have the same question in my mind, because I'm thinking like, if I'm a designer, and the things we're talking here, a lot of things related to find the evidence, find the proof of to measure your design. Is that means that data analytics, like we might need to think as a data analyst and also probably need some skill set on that part to find out which data would be useful and helpful for show for proving our design. Is that something you suggest? Like we might need to improve our data analyzing skill, things like that.
Look, yes. I mean, in the sense that you need access to the data, right? And you need easy, regular access to the data. You need to, at the very least, get the data in a way that you can make sense of it. Now, if you have the kind of data analysis skills that you just mentioned, then it doesn't, you can probably do it on your own. Many designers don't have that skill set, and so they need the data formatted for them in some kind of an effective way. Now, you can ask your business intelligence team to do that, or your data scientists to do that, or business analysts, or whatever it is. You can use standard reporting from the reporting tools that we normally use to do that. Or you could try to find products that really make it easy for you to get that information. There's a friend of mine named Stephen Cohen who is building a new product called Impact Product, which is exactly this for designers. It's basically how, as a designer, can I get really easy access to the metrics for the workflows that I build? And he's built this browser plugin that basically allows you to see data analytics for all of your work very quickly. And so that's one way to do that. That's really dealing with this exact question there, which is how can, as a designer who doesn't have access to the raw data and doesn't know what to do with that, even if I had access to it, how do I build regular, continuous access to understandable information about my work? And so like products like Impact Product are a great way to go.
That's right. Yeah, I will do some Google research after that and to find that out. Cool. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, probably a lot of serious questions, but I don't want to ask too many questions because we have 10 minutes and I want to keep it according to the time. Two questions related to you as a senior designer, but also as a design manager. You manage a lot of designers. You have those experience. According to that experience as a design manager, what do you think the best way for designers, like for designers in different levels to learn and grow in a team? So yeah, this could probably also a broad question, but yeah, I'd like
look, I can give you the generic answers of, you know, read books and do the work and attend conferences and take classes. And those are important and you should do that. So I'm not trying to trivialize that kind of stuff, but I'll say something else. And it comes back to the beginning of our conversation, which is try to find a place to work with someone or some ones who will mentor you, or find a mentor or something along those lines. I think the best, fastest way for you to learn is from somebody else, and somebody who can mentor you along the way. And so that's part of the things that I think junior designers don't look for when they interview for jobs is, what can I learn from this boss? What can I learn from my colleagues here? And that's something that I would absolutely build into my job search process as a designer so that I can always grow, right? What can I learn from this person? Or what can I learn by working with this team? And that's one of the best ways that you can level up and skill up beyond taking courses and taking classes and going to conferences, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a great one. And sometimes we might ignore the best resource is the place we're working at. And there could be some expert in this field and we can learn it from there, from them, rather than just to take on some online courses or other things, but could be not immediately can improve you in the real world scenario. That's great. And by the way, also like other resources, like conferences, podcasts, all the online learning courses, and there are, I'm thinking like at this stage, this age, probably the best age if you want to learn something by yourself. You can get unlimited resource and all the ways that is available for you. So it's the best age for everyone to learn. And yeah, for the designers, I think that's would be super important to have a mentor. Totally agree.
You can't be underestimated, honestly. And it's one of those things that I think get underestimated. I think that not enough designers seek out mentors. And again, this comes back to the beginning of our conversation, Bear. And I think part of it is because a lot of designers will say, look, I'm 3 years in, I'm a senior designer, I don't need a mentor, right? And that's BS. You're not a senior designer, as I said before, and a mentor would help you tremendously. And I wish I had them. I wish I'd sought them out more growing up. It's a humble move, right? And it's tough for people who have big egos like me and a strong belief in their skill sets, is to say, look, I need help and I want to learn from somebody else. But I can't stress enough how valuable that is in your career.
Yeah, that's great. And actually, you just answered one of my questions, like, what will you do if you can go again, start from the beginning, and probably reach out for a mentor would be your suggestion if you have the chance to go over again.
Absolutely.
Right. And one question is just about, like, at this stage, work remotely become the new norm, and it probably will last become the new norm and affect us for many years, and also like last time when we have the conversation, it's like you also said our ways of work was accelerated by COVID. And my question is how does a designer can cope with it or can get the right position according to this new norm? And as the, for example, like designers, sometimes we need communicate in person or to capture some more information in person. Like the bandwidth of communication online is limited quite a lot. So this is one example for it, but generally, what do you think for the strategy for designer can cope with the work remotely norm and get the best result from it?
So look, there's a few opportunities here. First of all, the fact that geography doesn't matter anymore is a tremendous opportunity. So for folks who don't live in New York or London or San Francisco or Boston, you know, you can get jobs in those cities now with companies that are based in those cities. So I think that that's tremendous. I think community is really important to stay sane. So find your community, whether it's a Slack channel, whether it's Twitter, whether it's just a private group of folks that you trust. I think that's really, really valuable. I have a community of people that I trust and I curate that community, and it's very important to me to maintain my sanity, to generate opportunities, to find collaborations, to learn from those folks. I think that, you know, spend the time trying out all of the different tools that are available today. We're at an interesting inflection point. The virus has, or the pandemic has accelerated, I think by a decade, the acceptance of remote and distributed teams. So I think that that's a positive thing. The negative thing here, I think, is that the tools that we have today have done the best job they can emulating the physical world. Yeah. And so we're at a place now where we've got virtual whiteboards and we've got virtual, you know, conference calls and virtual, you know, handoffs and, you know, real-time collaboration. But what we haven't seen yet, and I'm looking forward to it, is, okay, now what, right? So we've seen this before. Every time something happens, technology ends up mimicking the real world. And then people are like, oh, wait, this technology thing can do a lot more, and we push it forward. Like, so if you remember Web 1.0, right? Web 1.0 was digital brochures, right? It was like taking the stuff that was on paper and then just putting it online. Identical, right? And then people are like, oh crap, this web thing can do a lot more, right? Now we've got all these businesses running online. I think we're at that same point now. Like we took the real world experiences and we duplicated them in the digital, right?
Yeah.
Now that we're gonna be forced to be in this reality for a while longer, it's not gonna go away in 6 months necessarily. Now I'm really curious to see what Mural does, what Miro does, what InVision does, right? Figma, like what do these tools do now to really take advantage of the technology, right? In ways that we haven't imagined yet. So we've copied the physical world. Okay, cool, we're there. What's next? I don't know, I'm super excited to see it.
Yeah, that's a great insight, and I have exactly the same feeling and question. Like in my imagination, we haven't got the best way to collaborate with other designers. So in my mind, it could be like Miro plus Figma plus Zoom, like a live prototype or other things like InVision together as a tool. But then you reminded that it could be like we are just duplicate things from physical world. It feels like before cars was invented, everyone just imagined like this faster horse is the things I want, is the best I can got. But nobody can really imagine what a car looks like at before a car was invented. So we are just about at that age that probably for designers' perspective, it will be super exciting to see the tools can, as you said, take advantage of the technology and really help us to develop or to invent like a really new way of work together remotely. That could be super exciting. And yeah, just looking forward to seeing something cool like happen in a few years ahead. Like, yeah, that will be great to see.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. I look forward. I know all those companies have taken tremendous rounds of funding in the last 6 months. And so they've got the money, they've got the momentum. I can't wait to be surprised to see what they do.
Yeah. And like the fundamental construction, like the speed of the internet, like 5G, now we have 5G, like it will also become the standard in the coming years. And yeah, it could be like, and also the hardware is improving quite a lot. And not only speaking of the smartphones, but also for other computer hardwares, it's just not as it used to be. So it should be something new will happen in the coming years. Yeah, super exciting. Thanks, Jeff. I think that's all the questions I would like to ask. And also would like to update with what was your progress like. Now you're on finish your book, Forever Playable, and also it was published. What are you working on right now?
And so I'm working on more forever employable educational content is one of the things I'm building. So I'm going to build a program around the book Forever Employable and continue telling people about and promoting the book itself. In addition to that, I've got client work that's keeping me very busy. These days I'm helping one of the biggest telcos in the world kind of become a digital customer-centric product organization. So that's been really nice. And then still teaching a lot of classes, teaching Lean UX public classes, teaching OKR classes. Oh, and the last thing that's really relevant, I think, to your audience is Josh Seiden and I have signed up to write the third edition of Lean UX. So that's starting to happen. That won't be out for until next year sometime, but we've started that process, and that's exciting. It's exciting. That book, we finished the first version of that book 8 years ago and the second version of that book 5 years ago. And so it's exciting that there's still momentum behind this and there's still a desire to read this content and update this content. And so I'm super psyched about that.
Wow, that's so cool. And it also shows that it was tested by the market and by the audience. So that's super cool. And I always recommend to other designers, especially for UX designers, like how can I get familiar with the work I'm going to work in as a UX designer. So I always recommend that them just grab Lean UX at first and read it, because you will learn how it works in the real world scenario. And that will be really helpful and exciting to see the third version of this book published.
Yeah, cool. Me too.
Thank you, Jeff. And by the way, just a quick update about last time when we had a chat about your book Forever Employable. It was listened and downloaded for around 30,000 times, and most of the traffic came from China. So I'm quite surprised, because it was in English, and I didn't have enough time to translate the whole podcast. I just gave the brief introduction at the beginning of the podcast in Chinese, and most of the audience from China still listen the whole episode, the whole podcast. Yeah, that's quite surprising from my hand. Yeah, good to share with you. And I think you might want to know that. Yeah. So and I'm hopeful for this conversation, this podcast, it will going to share on my English podcast, which is still on building in the process. But I think it will going to publish around October, around next month. So I'll send you the link after it finished. And yeah, and all the best about for the project you are working on. And thank you again for accepting this meeting and share a lot of great insights with me. And yeah, and hopefully in the later stage we can have other conversation, maybe be more specific about some topic, about some questions. Yeah. So is there something you would like to mention at last, if something I'm missing or something you would like to comment?
I think that especially if you're looking to become a senior designer, I think that Forever Employable is a good book for you to read from a career standpoint. It's not a design book, but it does take a very human-centric approach to career growth and professional development. And so check it out, foreveremployable.com or on Amazon, and happy to know what you think if you get a chance to read it.
Yep. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much for this, and all the best to all the things you are doing. And have a evening, right? It's your evening? It's your...
No, it's morning.
Oh, it's morning. Then have a great day, and I will share the link of the show and also show note all the things later after I finish this. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye, Jeff.
Bye.